You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Let's get a lot of calls in here. BG in studio with us, fielding calls as well, 215-592-9494. Reminder, Sirianni, 840 today. And the reason why I say I thought it was a nice apology but insufficient, I don't really know what he specifically apologized for. Is it yelling at the guy in the stands or any number of people at the stands? Is it for the kids in the press conference?
He's sorry for how his energy was directed.
No, I get that, but I don't know what that means. Is that when he basically chastised the fans during the press conference? Is that when he told people, you know, when the question was asked about the offense struggling in the beginning of the game? No, we got that. We got that. Like, maybe you don't have to apologize for that, but I found it irritating. You know, like, I mean, the team hasn't scored in the first half and first quarter, and the head coach, we got it. That's like,
do you think he still needs to talk about the kid?
Yes, I'm going to ask. It's going to be one of the first questions. It's one of the first questions I'm going to ask him. One of the first questions I'll ask him today in the press in the interview is, do you think it was appropriate to have the kids there? Mm-hmm. We'll see what he says. It's a yes, no. Yes, it's appropriate. No, it's not appropriate. We'll see what he says. Let's go to the phones. Kevin in Warminster. Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Kevin.
So the reason for my call is, I made a post on Reddit yesterday, and before I kind of get into it, I'm just going to preface everything. So I was at the game on Sunday, section 138, row 2, so right behind the offense. At the end of the game, I'm a family man, so I had to do dad duty, and then was very tired, didn't get to look at anything until yesterday afternoon after I posted on Reddit. And a lot of people encouraged me to call in just to kind of give my take of the Sirianni interaction, because I believe that it was geared towards me.
So you were there? Was geared toward you?
Yes, and let me explain exactly why. Okay. So at the start of the game, we got the ball. First and 10, gave it to Saquon, got 5 yards. Second and 5, incomplete pass. Third and 5, incomplete pass. Fourth and 5, pumped the ball to the Browns. During the Browns series, they had an injury timeout. And as you know, at the stadium, one of the few times where it's kind of quiet is during an injury timeout. So as a fan that enjoys when we run the ball, I took the opportunity to start hollering about how we should be running the ball. I started yelling, if you're a star running back, it's 5 yards on first and 10. You give it to him again. Run the ball. Run the ball. And I was very loud. At moment, Nick turned around for a moment, kind of gave me a settle down, and like, we got this, we got this. So I got to say that I was somewhat impressed. Not that we did great things on the ground, but we committed to it. And
all right, hold on. Let me just start asking you some questions, Kevin. I appreciate your call. And of course, it's impossible for us to know if your story is true. But I just want to play this out for a moment, and I'm just going to ask you some questions.
Sure.
If what you're saying is accurate, I'll just ask you this. What did Nick Sirianni say to you as you heard it as the game was ending?
So that's where I am not 100% sure what he said, because obviously it was extremely loud. But as he came over and his motions and what we took, meaning myself, my wife, shout out, babe, love you, babe, and my brother-in-law, I was there with a group of 12. It was me, my family, my friend.
Kevin, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to get to the answer here. Like, if you're on the stand, I would say we don't need information we don't need. So you don't know what he said to you?
No, is he came back towards me and was motioning.
The answer is no, right? You do not know what he said to you. Yes or no?
No.
Okay, fair enough. All right, and did he look, I'm going to ask you one more question. Did he look angry in saying this possible thing, or did he look joking in saying this possible thing? Look.
He looked joking. The way that he looked towards us, and he was very jovial and laughing as he went away.
That's good. Kevin, are you the only person that he was, like, jawing with, interacting with in the stands that day in that vicinity?
So there was just that moment at the beginning of the game and then a moment at the end. I did not see him interact with anybody else.
Wow.
Okay.
That seems very uneventful compared to what it could have been in most of our imaginations.
I don't know what to believe, and I'm not trying to say I don't trust you, Kevin, but I just don't know. It's you know, we field a million phone calls. Who knows? Kevin, give me an answer here. You can win the prize today. Who needs to apologize?
Can I tell you who I don't think needs to apologize?
Sure.
I don't think that Nick needs to apologize for what happened on the sidelines at the end of the game, because what I said, you don't know if you're going to believe it. Who knows who's going to believe it, but the folks that I was around.
All right, his phone's zapping out. He's saying Sirianni doesn't need to apologize. Well, that's an impossible thing to know if you don't know what he said. that whole phone call, I take with a tremendous grain of salt.
He threw up his hands in disgust at the end of the interaction he was having, but this guy says he was joking.
Yeah, I
don't know. It's kind of...
Look, we field phone calls. How can we... I'll use the word, John. How can we discern what... that's Nick's big word these days, discern. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that
How can
call.
We wisely discern,
There's no way to know. But look, if that guy doesn't know what was said, if he was actually there in that person... Then...
But he's saying that Nick's demeanor suggested that he was not angry and he was not
fighting
with
which I'd say, what was Sirianni then apologizing for?
Mm-hmm. He was apologizing for the
optics.
Now, John, I know you keep reading the thing he said, but I mean, what was he apologizing for? The kids?
He's
apologizing that people
directed.
Got mad that he yelled at the fans. That's what. He's apologizing because people reacted to what he did. That's it.
Okay, but if he's joking with this guy, then what's he apologizing for?
Because people are mad about it.
Well, then just say, I don't have something to apologize for. I turned to this guy and told you, hey, I told you
he's
we're going to...
He's taking the path of least resistance
look, we'll get into all this.
I don't think that's
with...
effective. Saying, hey, I don't really believe this, but I'll apologize anyway.
Well, hence the reason why I said yesterday I thought it was nice but incomplete. I don't even know what he apologized for. Let's go to Seth the media. Seth, you're on WIP. I'm not saying he was wrong to apologize. I just like to know what he apologized for. Seth, hello.
Good morning. Good morning. I think Seltzer just told you. I think he's doing what a head coach. Now I do have some criticism on him, but he's doing what a head coach is supposed to do in any organization, and that's accept responsibility for things, whether it's your fault or not. Right?
Yeah. I don't like where this is head. I don't like how this has become. He's going to accept the responsibility for everything, you know, like, hey, just put it on me. I understand the methodology. I understand that he wants to take it all on. You know, like as a father, you want to take the pain away from your kids. You want to, as a coach, you want to take it all on. As the head coach, you want to shield your guys. But in some cases, it feels like, hey, that's on me. If it's not on you, are you getting it fixed? Like, if you're going to say, hey, that defensive call was my call, so put it on me. I'm the head coach. My bad. Well, what about the guy who actually made the call? Does he know how to fix it? Does he know how to make it better the next time? I like that you're accepting responsibility, but is the person who really made the mistake accepting the responsibility too and changing the way they're approaching this?
Which could include any number of players.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
But don't you want, you know, we can't have it both ways as fans. And I know we love our teams and everything, but when it comes specifically to his situation where you have an offensive and defensive coordinator that are the ones calling the plays, and we're like, well, what does Nick do? What does Nick do? Well, here he is. This is what he does, right? He hypes everybody up. He's jawing with the fans, whether it was wrong or not. I understand what Rhea is saying, that the optics look bad, so he's apologizing for that. He's doing what a head coach should do. And again, there's criticism coming, but in this particular situation, right, we want him to, you don't want him to hang a player out to dry. You don't want him to hang a coach out to dry, right? Maybe they'll say things in the press conference like, well, we need some things we need to discuss. And then, you know, behind closed doors, that's another situation where they're going to sit down with these coaches or players and say, man, you got to make that catch, or why'd we make that call? And then try and dissect that and go from there. But right out of the gate, as an organization, as a business, you need to correct whatever, you know, 73,000 or millions of people see you doing, yelling at another fan, you know, people that pay their hard-earned money to come to this game, and you're jawing with them because they're booing you. Whether or not we know what was said or not, it's still important to step up and go, you know what, I was wrong, you know, I got to do a better job at that. And what Seltzer said he is apologizing for is exactly right. It's the optics of it. It looked bad, and he was stepping up to say something about it. Now, that being said, the message that he gave the guys in the locker room, I mean, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a pro athlete, but listening to John and everything, I think the message at this point seems lazy and antiquated. I think there's another way to go about getting the players hyped up. It just seems kind of corny. It seems cornballish. And him having the kid there in the press conference is kind of a Bush League move. You know what I mean? Like, you want to apologize for, I just feel like he did that. Like you said, Joe, he brought his kid out there to kind of soften the blow and see, I am a family man, and the message in the room about the family and all that. And it's like, you're right. All those players have families, you know? So I see his point in accepting responsibility, and I appreciate that. But, man, stop with the cornball messages. You know,
all right, Seth, a lot of interesting points. Give me your answer here for who needs to apologize.
Besides my ex-wife, I think Chuck Fletcher needs to apologize.
Chuck Fletcher.
Good answer.
That's a classic.
I like the ex-wife better.
Yeah, ex-wife was good. Chuck Fletcher was good. Well, there's a lot of stuff in the last 20 years of the Flyers they should apologize for. All right, by the way, Flyers later tonight back in action. And if you missed it last night, preseason game, I know a lot of people don't watch, you know, Sixers preseason, but Paul George got hurt. It's a hyperextended knee. We don't know how long he'll be out. It was on a defensive play. Looked funky. You know, shouldn't be something I wouldn't think too serious, but it does make you wonder in 8 days when they play their first game on Wednesday of next week whether he'll be ready. You know, and we already know Joel might not be ready, so it might be Tyrese and everybody else, you know.
8 days is a really long time for a hyperextension unless you're talking about, you know, really tall guys playing in
and
the
Sixers
NBA.
Are
34, 35 yeah. years old, too, yeah. on top of that. Yeah.
And they've always been upfront about the extent of injuries.
Oh, my God.
So. Oh, yeah, they're exactly. very honest and open with us.
All right, so Brandon Graham with us in the studio. BG, let's get to the, you know, caller, one of the last two, I forget which one, was touching on the concept of a coach, one, taking accountability, but also sort of covering for athletes a little bit and sometimes saying, you know, like Andy was a master at not, and it irritated the fans, but not saying anything in a press conference that would be derogatory toward you guys. Then there's a guy like Bill Parcells back in the day. He'd be like Mickey and Rocky. He'd be like, you know, you're spit and you should carry this spit and Sims, you stink. And all right. So do you appreciate when the coach, any coach, in this case, this coach, has your back, you, a player, you, the collective team, when in fact at times, you know, it's the team's fault for not executing and not so much the coach's fault for what was called? Is that appreciated by the players?
Yeah, that's appreciated because, you know, sometimes it's you. And then it's like, ooh, thank you, coach. I know I got you the next time. I promise you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's that type of accountability between each other because at the end of the day, we in there together. And so the media and fans going to attack on what they seen out there and what we show. But if we on the same page on that, you know, and I'm like, hey, I got you the next one, you know, and you get it fixed, like you say, it's worth it. But it's tough because the head coach he got to take everything. And even though some stuff ain't his fault, but that's the part of the accountability. That's the part where the relationship come into play where you and the player, y'all need to be on the same page with that too. It's like, hey, I took that for you, but hey, come on.
Brandon, you know what I mean? How do you think, so I'm curious how you think Nick's doing right now. I don't mean coaching. I mean him, the person. Here's what I mean. Doug 2020. And Seltzer, you'll remember this well. I thought he looked, I mean, the visual.
Haggard. Tired.
Beat up.
Yep, no doubt.
I mean, first off, it's the COVID year. You guys have all these different protocols. The team was headed down the tubes. You finished 4-11-1. It was like a death march to the, you know. Mm-hmm. And he just looked disastrous. And it's it just, how do you think Nick's doing personally right now?
I think he's doing good. I mean, I think, you know, for him, it's like, man, it's bring it on. You know what I'm saying? Like, because last year, it couldn't have got worse. I mean, 10-1, then to go down like that, it was even worse to deal with. But I know he's in there every day working to get everything right. I mean, them coaches be in there. You know what I'm saying? As a player, seeing it, and from when I'm done, it's like, yeah, I want to help around with the coaching, but them hours, boy, them boys, they put that work in. So I respect what they do. I think that Nick is just – sometimes it's hard in Philly because, I mean, he want to go places. He want to go eat. He want to do this. He don't want to answer to all this stuff because a lot of it is all of us together. But at the end of the day, he's the one that that has to answer for everything. So I would say that he's in a good place with us. I mean, you know, y'all make y'all judgments off whatever, but I don't see what y'all see on that right now because the energy's still high.
Mm-hmm. So do the guys – the way it felt to the fans afterwards was there was like a real disconnect between the way the game felt, you know, and the way the game felt for us and the way the game felt for Nick. You know, like
yeah.
It felt like Nick afterwards was very, you know, proud of the showing, you know, and it was like, man, We wanted to just bludgeon these guys. We wanted to take them down after a bye and all that extra time to prepare. Like, we wanted to be up double digits in the first half. Instead, it was neck and neck into the fourth quarter. Like, why is he so happy afterwards? Like, why are the children included? It doesn't feel like a celebrational moment. It feels like we just skated by the skin of our teeth. So there was this disconnect for us as fans,
totally,
between mm-hmm. the way he was portraying that game, almost like it felt dishonest or something.
It's out of touch.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Brandon, there's wins,
ignorant,
and then there's 4-point wins against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah,
you know, it's two. Like, you guys in 2022, candidly, you would have beaten this team by 3 touchdowns. And I'm not saying that offensively to you, but it's true. I mean, I think the way we were reacting was, it's like, Nick, have some awareness that you just beat the Cleveland Browns by 4 points. Like, come on. That's the way I think we felt.
But then I've heard Andy Reid say 1,000 times.
I know, a win is a win.
A win is a win.
I promise you.
Yeah, and it really is, man. It really does. Sometimes, man.
So you promise what, Brandon? You think people take for granted the wins, like when they happen and how they happen?
It just hit me. Nick Sirianni knows it's a win is a win. And it's like he wanted to celebrate it as a win. That's why he brought his kids out there. He didn't look at it like how y'all looked at it. And he knew it was going to be some stuff, but he didn't think of the magnitude of what he did out there on the field. Then we won the game. Of course, the expectations was to blow them out, like, you know, everybody, because everybody see they struggling. But we won. And so I'm going to enjoy that. I'm going to enjoy a win because, man, this junk already hard enough. And, yeah, we got to work. That's why we working today. I'm about to go in there right now to get some work in so I can get right for Sunday. And then maybe what I did last week, we're going to scratch this. We're going to do this. It's like, man, you gotta go. I mean, you got to enjoy the journey because you're learning as you're going through the journey. And so as him right now, Nick, he learned, you ain't going to see him do that no more. He going to have some more passion on when we celebrating and doing handshakes and stuff after scoring and winning. I guess that's when you will see his emotion. But I think he going to keep the fans out of it. He got to keep it out of them because people going to attack every little detail of what he do. And so that's the learning curve for him. But what I said is a win, man. So I'm about to enjoy it like that. I ain't about to come in here like it's a graveyard shift. Man, we won this game. We won. But all I know is we gonna get better and we gonna look better, you know what I'm saying, for the fans as we keep going down the line. And I believe that. I truly do believe because how we practice and the things that goes into the week, it's like, man, they can only do so much. We got to make sure we're doing it too. You know what I'm saying? So I know I'm loving where we at as a team, the way we talking to each other. I'm telling you, man, like it's going, we building it. And one day I'm gonna come in here and say, hey, I told you.
Listen, Brandon, I look forward to that day. And let me say, and I've said this to you on the air before, I've said it to you privately, I appreciate and admire the way you handle these things. I know it's not, listen, we're asking you to basically psychoanalyze your coach. Yeah. I mean,
not
if you asked
easy.
John Ritchie to do that 20 years ago, he would not have been able to.
No.
He would have been so uncomfortable, he would have said no comment.
It is a different day. It is, because mm-hmm. I came on the tail end of that old school way with Coach Reed, and man, it was tough. I mean, telling you, training camp was the toughest. Man, since I've been in the league, it ain't been that tough as far as, like, them 2-a-days was 2 hours, 45 minutes. The next practice, 2 hours, 45 minutes. Then you got to do it for 3 weeks straight. It ain't no off days.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, good luck versus the Giants. Psych up Saquon. Not that he probably needs to be psyched up for this game. I mean, he's going to have a little something extra, right?
Man, I know he is. I'm going to just try to protect him from him until we get out there.
Brandon, congrats on the win, and good luck on Sunday. Thanks, bud.
I appreciate it.
There he is, Brandon Graham. All right, great to be with you on this Tuesday morning. Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie. All right, a big hour up ahead here. Elliot Short Parks in a moment. Nick Sirianni, 8:40. Reminder, Phillies, 11 o'clock today. Press conference right here on WIP. It is a Dave Dombrowski, Rob Thompson press conference that we will carry live during Joe and Hugh's show.
Notable. Do you think their children will be with them?
No, I don't.
They probably have grown children. It would be pretty hilarious if they brought like their 35-year-old kid with them.
Rhea, give me a prediction.
Yes.
I'm going to ask Sirianni in 20 minutes.
Yes.
Appropriate or inappropriate to have your kids at the press conference? What do you think his answer will be?
Oh,
Well, I mean, I'll tell you that specific one,
because he's already made it clear he doesn't think it's inappropriate to bring kids. Yeah. He's done it before.
To this point, but he may change his approach.
Here's
the question I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Do you think it's appropriate to have your kids at a press conference?
Are you asking what I think or what he's going to say?
What do you think he will say?
He will say, because he's always promoting family. I mean, you heard it there in that postgame thing.
I don't think he'll do it again. That's my gut feeling. Unless they win some massive playoff game, win the Super Bowl,
No one has a problem with it in the playoffs.
You got to win something significant to do that.
A four-point win over the Browns
doesn't qualify. How does he answer the question?
I think he'll kind of talk around it. But I think the main point with this is people don't have a problem with it if they don't think your kids are a shield. Like, the only issue is when people think that you are bringing your kids out to diffuse a situation or to get asked easier questions, that's when it's a problem.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. I don't like it even with the regular 14-point regular season win. I think there's a time and a place. And I don't think
playoffs.
Yeah.
I need a playoff win.
Come on. Maybe a clinch a playoff spot or something, but not week, whatever it was, 5 or 6 of pro football. All right, Elliot, in a moment, I want to play some audio. You know, John, there's been a lot, obviously, very critical of Sirianni, and rightfully so on a lot of fronts. Damian Woody yesterday on ESPN, the most critical.
Like, shockingly critical. I couldn't believe a former athlete, national guy, said this.
Yeah, this was...
And he doesn't pop off all the time.
But
he's not known for that, I don't think.
A lot of people are really not happy with Nick. So, Damian Woody of ESPN, I mean, brace yourself for about 45 seconds because he really went off on Sirianni yesterday. Here's what he said.
What's this clown behavior, bro? This dude is a clown. Like, seriously, you gonna seriously talk trash to the fans?
Your own fans.
Your own fans. Like, listen... People come out here and pay big money to come out and watch you put a product out on the field. When you don't perform well, they have every right to boo you.
Damn right.
And you're going to get it all in your feelings because fans are booing you because your team stinks? Like, bro, come on. And then you brought up in our meet, like, oh, then you're going to bring your kids into the post game to kind of soften the blow from what reporters might ask you. This dude is a straight clown, bro. Like, I just don't have any respect for what this man is doing. Y'all barely beat the god-awful Cleveland Browns, and then you want to talk trash to the fans. Get the hell out of here.
Well, I mean, that's pretty strong, man. It really is.
It really was.
It's really strong.
Now, if he was not talking trash to the fans, that makes a difference, too.
Well, I don't buy anything it's not buy. The caller that called us last hour saying he was the guy I was being directed to,
yeah.
I have no opinion on it when the guy doesn't know what was said.
It should make you think, like, hold on a second. Like, it's possible if he was not talking trash to the Eagles fans, it's possible if he was interacting in a way that he thought was appropriate.
Yeah, but Nick didn't look happy. I mean, just the way I looked at it visually, he didn't look happy.
He did not look happy. What we heard today from our caller was incongruent with what I thought I saw.
I agree with you. But look, I mean, you don't always know. I know. No, I agree. All right, Sirianni with us in 15 minutes. Elliot Shore Parks right now. He's brought to us by Colonial Hyundai. Shop online 24/7 at ColonialHyundai.com. Colonial Hyundai, the faster, easier, better way to buy a Hyundai. Good morning, Elliot.
What up? How you guys doing?
Dude, when you signed up to be an Eagles beat reporter, holy mackerel.
I always tell people it's never, ever, ever a boring day.
It's not exactly T.O. doing sit-ups in the driveway, which might be the all-time all-timer, or Michael Vick being signed, which might be the other all-time all-timer. But, Elliot, you know what's incredible? They're a freaking boring football team on the field, but off the field, all hell's breaking loose sometimes.
Well, the other thing that's incredible, like, I think back to Sunday, and I completely understand the emotion of them not playing well. Like, I 100% get that from the fans' base, from the fans' perspective. I rewatched the game yesterday, and I know people don't want to hear this, but I actually thought Sunday was a step in the right direction. It wasn't the step everyone wanted them to take, but I do think they look like an improved football team. So that, at its core, is probably, I would think...
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, Elliot.
So maybe that's what Nick was all excited about.
So we haven't talked much about that. I did not see that. That's not what I saw. I saw a team that won a game because A.J. Brown's amazing and the Browns stink. But give me, inside the game, what encouraged you for the remainder of the season with the Eagles?
Well, first I would say they only won because of the A.J. Brown thing. Like, the good news is A.J.'s on the team. He wasn't a rent-a player for the day. So they are going to have him for the rest of the season.
Sure.
So you're right. A.J. being a great player does make them a better team. I agree with you on that. But when I watched the game, I saw three really important things that I thought were major improvements. One, not only did Jalen not turn the ball over, he didn't even come close to turning it over. Like, there's been games, at pretty much every game actually, where we'll say, okay, he had an interception, but he could have had three or four more. The biggest problem with this team was the turnovers, and I know it's only one game, but coming out of the bye week, it does look like it was the best job they've done taking care of the ball. I also thought that Jalen was outstanding against the blitz, and I know he's been good against it this year, but both of his touchdowns came against the blitz. I thought he made smart decisions with the football, and as much as the Browns are bad, and they are, their defense is not terrible. So I thought it was an encouraging performance from the offense. Even though 20 points isn't enough, they did kill the final 4 minutes of the clock to seal the game out. So I definitely understand wanting to see them win by 14, 20. Like, I get that for sure. But if you remove the emotion of it, I do think they played a better football game than they had prior.
Elliot, how important is it that Nick sets an example of emotional control and composure for his players on game day?
So I do think there is definitely an argument for that, 100%. Like, if you look at the Jalen Carter thing a few weeks ago against the Saints, I understand that while on face surface you can look and go, how can Nick look at Jalen Carter and tell him to calm down when Nick's yelling at the fans? I completely get that. But I do think there's two ways to look at this. One, it's how this is viewed outside the building, and it's how it's viewed inside the building. And I can only take the players at their word, but every player I've talked to since this happened has liked it and supported Nick for it. So while I do think it is important he sets the right tone for the team, I think we're viewing this as something that's going to hurt him as a coach in that building. I actually think it's going to help him as a coach with his players in that building.
That's interesting.
Wow. Why is the offense so simple, Elliot? It feels like things have actually streamlined to where it's simpler than what we started the season at. And what we thought was this thing was going to evolve, and we're going to see an under-center play-actioning, motioning, pre-snap motioning offense that's brought up to speed with what the rest of the NFL is doing. I'm not seeing that. It's kind of the opposite is transforming.
Yeah, I think they're running the offense that they think best suits Jalen Hurts. And they're also running the offense that Jalen Hurts calls at the line of scrimmage. I mean, Jalen Hurts changes the play quite a bit at the line of scrimmage. And we saw that this past Sunday when him and AJ signaled to the play that ended up winning the game, right? So a lot of what you see from the offense is Jalen Hurts. We've been through Shane Steichen. We've been through Brian Johnson. We've been through now Kellen Moore. And the offense always kind of looks the same. The one common denominator is Jalen Hurts. And it's funny because if you think back to Chip Kelly's time here, right, a big criticism everyone had of him was he was going to run his offense no matter what the personnel was, right? Remember, he was doing
it was a huge flaw. It really was.
With Sam Bradford, right? So I think the coaches are doing the opposite of that. Like, everyone wants him to run under center and do all these things. They are running what they feel, along with Jalen, is best for Jalen.
Elliot, let's talk about, and I agree with you on that. Let's talk about, and I don't like it, but I agree with you. Let's talk about some of the injuries. I mean, I feel like it's like some big injuries that have been obscured in the last 40 hours because of all the other storylines. So, Mulata, Goddard, and Slay, what can you tell us?
So, Mulata, I think, is like, I would almost just expect him not to play again this season, because I think even if he does play again this season, it's going to be really, really hard for him to miss the amount of time he's going to miss. I would guess 3-4 games, if not more, to come back at his size, miss the middle of the season, and play at a high level. And that's not about him. It's just about a human his size. Like, we've seen offensive and defensive linemen miss time in season, and it is so hard to come back and play at a high level. So the Mulata injury is definitely a major concern. Goddard, I think you're going to see him miss probably at least the next 2 or 3 games. And then I think he'll come back, and we'll see, you know, how he is coming off the injury. And then Slay, I don't have any like updated inside info on that one. But yeah, 2 big injuries, losses for sure with Goddard and Mulata.
That's big time. You know, Elliot, I want to ask you a Twitter poll question of the day. I'm curious your answer here. It's brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. The all-new 2025 Equinox sets the bar on styling, and Armin Chevrolet has them in stock now. Together, let's drive to Armin Chevrolet. So, Elliot, you are like the one person. Phil's Mets series, you said Mets in 4. People wouldn't want to hear it. You said it. Yeah. I compliment you for, you know, getting it right. So get this one right, no matter what the answer is. The Eagles are a blank football team. Good, average, or bad? What's the answer?
I think they're average. I think they're average right now. But I'm happy you brought the Phillies up because I actually think, and I love talking about the Eagles every single day. I love power rankings. I love talking about how they're playing. What the Phillies taught us was it truly does not matter, right? The Phillies were the best team in baseball for what, half the season, 60% of the season, whatever it was. And then they won one playoff game and got bounced in four games. So as discouraging as it was to watch the Eagles, to a certain extent, play the way they did on Sunday, the reality is they won and the rest of the NFC East lost. And that is a step in the right direction.
True.
So they're an average team for sure right now. But I just, after seeing the Phillies, I can't get worked up about it because it's so long until it matters.
Elliot, are we better than everyone else in our division or are the Commies surpassing us?
I think the Commodores are better. I do. Or Commanders. Sorry, Commodores.
The Commodores. Got Lionel Richie in the division.
Yeah. Right. Everyone says their name wrong intentionally. It throws it off. But the Commanders, I think they're better. And I think they're better for two reasons. One, they look like a better coach team. And two, I think they have a better quarterback. So if you have those two things, it's hard not to look at you as a better team. And they played well against the Ravens. That's a tough game to go to Baltimore. So I think they're one right now, but I would put the Eagles still.
Elliot, love having you on the show, pal. We'll talk to you Friday before the game. I don't know how the Eagles are going to beat the Giants without Boston Scott. I'm already a little sad about that. No more Boston Scott up there, but hopefully Saquon takes care of business. Thanks, Elliot.
Yeah, I'll talk to you guys.
All right, thanks, bye. Elliot. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go to Mike. He's calling from Douglasville right now. Reminder, Nick Sirianni with us in about 6 minutes. Mike, good morning.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, Mike.
So my thing with Sirianni, I mean, yeah, his antics get a little old and his nonsense is whatever. But if I was to focus on everything this guy says and be mad about it, I'd still be mad about the first press conference. My thing is the X's and O's and in between the lines on Sundays or whatever day of the week they play. What I don't understand is back in 2021 when Nick was calling the offense, I didn't know what the heck I was watching. Then it got better, which we learned was Steichen. 2022, we had the RPO-based offense, and it was dynamic, and it looked awesome. 2023, once again, Nick Sirianni is more involved in it, and I don't know what the heck I was watching. And now, so far this year, I was told it was going to be something different. Kellen Moore was supposed to bring a different dynamic to this offense, and we were supposed to see more. You know, the under center, the option, or the play action, and everything like that. Once again, I don't know what the heck I'm watching.
So, look, Mike, I think there's two points here, and they're totally different points. Let me just state them. One is that I agree with Elliot, and I've said this for a while. I think they run what they feel Jalen is best at and most comfortable with. That may limit the offense, but I think it's a fact. I can't prove it, but I believe it. Say it again.
My part with that comment there is it comes down to coaching. You know, when I coach kids,
I agree.
I try to put them in positions where, yes, in game, they're comfortable. But in practice, I put them in positions where they're uncomfortable because you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Look, I agree with you. I agree.
Was Tom Brady the GOAT when he got drafted? No, he got drafted in the sixth round, and coaching got him to be
look,
to where he got.
I hear you. Unless they think he would flat stink and be an under center. I mean, I don't know, but that's I hear you. All right, here's my second point, Mike. And you touched on something I think is really important that hasn't gotten enough discussion because so many other things have. It just feels like he's still got his hands too in this offense and that, you know, it seemed like Lurie and Howie stripped him of power, but maybe didn't go as far as people would have preferred.
Well, I mean, just Grant, he's the head coach. He's
I know.
Have
That's
say.
Where it's complicated.
He can do things like that. But, like, now he's admitting he's calling, and I don't think it's to the extent where he's calling a physical play. Maybe he's saying, you know,
no, he is.
Hey, go
he,
cover he, three. No, well, I mean.
Well, you mean the cover?
Hey,
you mean defensively? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he's like, I want to run the ball here. I want to throw the ball deep. I want to throw it short or,
yes.
You know, I want to see cover three.
I would imagine that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Let's go cover four. That's that makes me feel better here.
Yeah, I get it. If it's something like that, I get it. He can have his hand in that. I don't think he's physically sitting there with a play sheet saying, you know, this is the exact play we got to run.
All right, Mike, give me an answer here, my man. Who needs to apologize?
You know, I try to be a nice person. I really do. I try to hold doors open for people and everything like that. And when I hold a door open for somebody and they walk past me and don't say, like, thank you or something, it pisses me off. So every single one of those people should apologize.
It's a great answer.
So are you expecting the thank you when you do it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
money. Doesn't that take away the like altruistic nature of it?
It sort of works against
absolutely
what you're going
for. No, when somebody holds it for me, I say thank you.
Of course, but that doesn't mean that if someone doesn't say thank you, that you shouldn't be doing it for the thank you.
James, no one does it for the thank you. You do it to be a courteous human.
Yeah,
agree.
Yeah.
So whether you're thanked or not, like, honestly, shouldn't really matter.
Yeah, I don't think
it does
being
matter.
Real about it.
Nope. Disagree. You and I are disagreeing on a lot here today.
Good.
That's all right. That's okay. Let's talk to Ken and Cinnaminson. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Prince. How are you today?
Good, buddy.
Doing well, Ken.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
So I agree with James. I think you hold the door because you just think it's the right thing to do.
No, that's what I said, not what he said. He said you do it for the thank you.
No, I said you care about the thank you, and thus that takes away the whole point of the holding the door. My point is it shouldn't matter. Like, obviously you want to get thanked, but it shouldn't matter if you get thanked because you're doing it to be altruistic, to do a good thing. Who cares if you get thanks for it?
And Ken, here's my response. I disagree.
Joe all right, cares let's if all he gets thanks.
Ken, what do you
that's
got,
the
bud?
Point, yes.
Yeah.
Ken, go ahead.
Glad you disagree with me, Joe. Listen, I found the whole press conference and everything like that, you know, as cringeworthy as everybody else did. I am not reflexively defending Nick Sirianni, but kind of, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that's taken place over the last couple of days. The tipping point for me was listening to a former head coach who's 33-47 as a head coach in the NFL talk about, you know, on Fox Sports 1, Hot Take 1, about how he wouldn't do what Nick Sirianni did. And, you know, he's 33-47. Nick Sirianni would have to coach this team for six more years to reach 47 losses at the rate he wins.
Yeah, you've been very consistently very pro-Sirianni through the years, Ken.
Well, here's why, Joe. Because we need to stop pretending like we have any idea what actually goes on behind the closed doors in that locker room, okay? You have Jason Kelce on here every Thursday. He consistently says the same thing about how Nick Sirianni holds people accountable in meetings in a way he's never seen before. Zach Ertz said it the first time I've ever heard it said was Zach Ertz like 2 years ago. Brandon Graham consistently tells you how much they all love and respect Nick Sirianni. And you get all these answers, but they don't fit in with what you want to believe, which is nobody respects Nick Sirianni in that locker room and think he's a clown. I don't care what Damian Woody thinks. Damian Woody is getting paid to talk about football.
Ken, it's incongruent. Like, what we are told that the guys feel is incongruent with what we see, with what we hear. Like,
what
I can't imagine
exactly,
as
God.
Any human. I can't imagine anyone, like you included, Ken, if you were sitting there in a meeting with the offense and Nick Sirianni said some of the things or, you know, some of the off-the-wall stuff. Like, I can't imagine that you'd be good with it.
But if I know behind the scenes, if I really know what's going on and I know who that person is, so when he goes out there and he says it's all on me, right? From what we heard about how he uses meetings and accountability, putting the numbers up on the screen and all that stuff,
he's
that we've heard
excellent.
About,
we're told by Jason Kelce he's the greatest in meeting coach he's ever been
around.
Yeah,
he said that. I can't.
What he's doing publicly is for our consumption to satisfy
possibly.
Our
right? Ken, give me an answer. Who needs to apologize?
At 11 o'clock this morning, Dave Dombrowski needs to apologize for every pathetic trade deadline move he's made since he's been here.
It's an interesting answer.
I like it.
That's interesting. Let's talk about that for a moment. So Sirianni joins us any moment. But Rob Thompson and Dave Dombrowski today, John, at 11 o'clock. What do you want to hear from him?
How do we reverse this trend, which is...
going backwards.
Yeah, is the slide. I mean, a steep slide.
Four games is
ripping our guts out.
Yeah.
We need to fix this in a hurry.
Give
me hope.
There's so many different things I'd like to hear at 11 o'clock today from those guys. I think one of the big ones is explain to me how a team that was so great for 2 months was so average for 4 months. And did you feel in the moment that they had taken the greatness for granted, that they had just assumed, rightfully so, that they would make the playoffs, but that affected their play
so early that they lost edge, that they struggled to get back. I think there's something in there, because it did feel to me, like, to use a Rocky III analogy, it felt to me like they lost the eye of the tiger. And, you know, four months of average baseball is a lot.
They forgot how to be great. There's no doubt in my mind. They knew at one point, at the beginning of the season.
And they did it.
And there was such a long period of time elapsed, it really got away from them. They couldn't recapture it. And we thought that they would be able to. They thought that they would be able to flip that switch.
Yeah.
It took too long, too much time elapsed for that switch to remain.
And look, there are sub-issues, which, you know, Ken touched on one regarding Dave Dombrowski and the trade deadline. Yeah, I'd like to hear, look, does Dave Dombrowski have to, you know, be there the way Howie Roseman was at the end of last year when he looked like he'd just been to a funeral because the team lost 6-7? No, Dombrowski doesn't have to look that bad and sound that bad. But his trade deadline hurt. I mean, Estevez gave up a home run and was not a lockdown closer.
It was
all
the right parts they needed, and he got the wrong player in every case.
He traded for the right positions and the wrong people. No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the Hayes thing was a disaster.
Oh my God!
You know, a disaster. Yeah,
and that is unfortunate. I mean, it's like tragedy befell him to some degree once he got here.
Listen,
he was uncontrollable. Like
but to be fair, John, there are people like James that know a lot more about random players in baseball that told us right from the beginning, before Hayes got hurt,
he wasn't an everyday guy.
He's just not a good player.
And they insisted that he was our left fielder every day from the moment before he arrived.
Yeah,
it just didn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, so anyway, that'll be a fascinating press conference, 11 o'clock today, with obviously Dave Dombrowski and very notably Rob Thompson, which a lot of people, I think, would assume means, given that Rob Thompson will be at that press conference, that's probably a signal that Rob Thompson's back as the manager for 2025. But look, we'll see what they say. Again, we will carry that press conference today at 11 o'clock during Joe and Hugh's show, Dombrowski and Rob Thompson. All right, let's talk to the Eagles head coach. Nick Sirianni is brought to us every single Tuesday at this time by Bud Light. Of course, you can pregame with Ava Graham at Casey's in Quakertown. That's Quakertown, PA, this Sunday before the Eagles game as they take on New York. You can win tickets to a home game and Eagles merchandise. The 3-2 head coach of the Eagles, Nick Sirianni. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Nick. So, Nick, congrats on the victory. I know there has been a lot going on. You know, we'll just ask you this open-ended question to start. What has the last 40 hours been like for you since you guys got that W? I mean, I know a lot happening. What's the last day and a half been like for you?
Yeah, you know, obviously just getting everything corrected from the game that we need to get corrected. So there's been a lot of, you know, just, you know, always starts with tough conversations as far as us as coaches of, you know, what we screwed up, because we want to be hungry, make sure we understand that what we screwed up, so we can get better from it. But then again, what did we do well? How can we repeat that? How can we look at different things? So it's a Monday and a Tuesday, as obviously we're just starting Tuesday and starting to get into our prep on the New York Giants. But a lot of just, you know, fixing the mistakes, and, you know, obviously a lot easier to fix mistakes after a win, but make no mistake about it, the corrections and the standard is still what it is, and we just buckle down and try to get to work and do that.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about some of the stuff after the game, because there's the game and then there's other stuff. So you, of course, apologized yesterday in the press conference. You didn't specify precisely what you were apologizing for, and I'm just curious, what did you say to the fan or fans near the end of the game?
Oh, shoot. Now, I keep, obviously, everything of those things, private, just like my conversations with players. If the camera picked it up, it picked it up. But just, you know, a little back and forth. But what really, my energy, right, I'm trying to bring the energy. I think that's something that I've always done and always been able to do well, is bring energy. But my energy needs to be devoted towards, you know, coaching the players, like my butt off on the players, which, you know, I think if you spend any time here or when you're out at practice or out in the meetings, my energy is high and I'm constantly trying to coach these guys high. But that's where it needs to be focused, and to motivate them. And really, I say motivate, but to just wire them the way we need to be wired. And then also, you know, to celebrate with them, because there's nothing like celebrating with your teammates. It beats anything else, you know, anything where you say to a fan, anything you say to an opposing teammate, celebrating with your teammates is the best thing. And so, you know, I just, you know, I'm just saying that I want to make sure that I am doing those things and not doing anything else. You know, it's not productive. And, you know, if anybody took it the wrong way, I wanted to apologize to them because, you know, that's what being a man's about, is being able to admit your mistakes and you know, move on from them and, you know, remember them so you don't repeat those mistakes.
Nick, let's talk about Sunday's press conference. So, and I want to be really clear on this. I truly and greatly admire your love for your family. I mean, it's so evident that you wear it on your sleeve, your heart. It's great. It really is. I do think, and I think a lot of people share this sentiment, there's a time and a place to incorporate, you know, children in a post-game press conference, perhaps after a playoff win. Looking back on it, and now moving forward, do you think it is appropriate to have children at a post-game press conference with you right there?
I think I shouldn't swear in front of my kids. I don't do that. My wife was very quick to tell me don't swear in front of them. But I have so many great memories of football and growing up in football is why I'm in this position today. And I said this after in my press conference on Sunday. I have so many great memories. The relationships that I have because of this game and the things that my dad, when he was a football coach, let me experience. I can't do all those things for my kids. Right? One practice isn't after school where I go out there and play in the bags and do things like that. You know, practice is during when my kids are in school. So there are limited opportunities to be able to, be able to share these. I love my family with everything I have, and I want them to love this game the way I love this game because of what this game has done for me. That was my only intention. Just like my intention is, like, my kids get to go play catch on the field after we win. And my only intention is after a win. Being able to, my kids love going up with that press conference with me, and my only intention is to share a moment, you know, after that. And in my eyes, when my mind, you know, I've learned in this game that it's hard to win, and you have to appreciate the wins. If you don't appreciate the wins, it is a miserable, long, lonely experience. And so, my only intention. Is my love for my family and want them to share that moment with me because of my past.
So, Nick, to that point, though, even if it sounds like you're saying, even if it bothers a lot of people, it sounds like you're saying you intend to do that again. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Again, that is for my family, and I think that you do the same thing for your family that you think that is important to them.
Nick, let me throw one more at you, and then we'll get deeper into football itself. So, you know, we field a lot of phone calls here, as you know, and I think it's fair to say basic fan frustration relates to this sentiment on Sunday. A victory against a pretty bad team that was a very close game in a season with big expectation and major stars, and even the wins have felt underwhelming this year. And all of that, plus stuff on Sunday after the game, there's a lot of frustration right now amongst the fan base. Does that sentiment get to you where you recognize fans are very frustrated even though you have an above 500 record right now?
All we're trying to do is win games. Obviously, we always want to give the fans something to cheer about, and I think at the end of the day, when you look at the games, you want to be able to say you won a lot of games. And so our focus and our only focus is to how we get better as a football team to win a football game this upcoming week. And we're not thinking about 2 weeks from now. We're not thinking about the past. We're learning from the past. We're not thinking about, you know, whatever happens in the future. We're only thinking about the New York Jets and how we win that football. New York Giants and how we win that football game. And if you focus on anything else, if you focus on, like, it's just you got to focus on the things that you can control. Of course, our fans are the best fans in the world. They I can't say how much the noise that allowed us, I've said this multiple times since the game, the noise that made them kick a field goal, for us to be able to go into a 4-minute, for them to get two offside penalties or two false starts penalties, and then we never gave the ball back to them, and we're in a 4-minute drill instead of a 2-minute drill. Like, the fans helped us win that football game. We love the fans. We love the things that they provide for us. And so, of course, we want to make them happy. They're our fans. Like, but we have to focus on the things, only the things that can help us, get better and help us, put us in positions to win this week. And it's just about winning games. And sometimes in this week, that team was hungry. That team knew that they had to come in here and play the best game of their lives to make sure that they kept their season going. And it's a long season. But they wanted everything they had. They had to win this football game. And they got good players on that team. They got good coaches on that team. And so we knew we were going to get their best shot. And you know what? We got their best shot. Nick, and we were able to come out on top.
We're the only team in the league who hasn't scored in the first quarter. What do you think the biggest reason is for that fact?
Yeah, a lot of different things. Obviously, if we knew the exact answer, we would fix it. But we're constantly trying different formulas, different things that have worked for us, different things that have worked for other teams. What I was proud about with the guys is that, you know, we had this. We worked so hard on this in the bye week, and we come off the bye week. And we're like, we got to start fast. And you know what? Defensively, we started fast. It's offense. Like, I think that needs to be said. The offense hasn't started fast. And so what I was proud of the guys is, like, we had this intention. We're starting fast. We're scoring on our first drive, or we're scoring on our second drive. Well, neither of those things happened. And what their resolve, the players' resolve and the coaches' resolve there to say, okay, it didn't go, like, that's sports, right? It didn't go as planned. Now what? What are you going to do now? I think about Jalen, who started 0-for-5, and I wouldn't say all five of those incompletions are his fault. Like, there's a throwaway, there's a couple things that happen intermixed in that. And then he goes 16-for-20 off there, all while us intending to say we're going to start fast. I just think that's unbelievable dog mentality, unbelievable resolve. Now, do we need to score in the first quarter? Hell yeah, we've got to start scoring in the first quarter. Sure. But I do think that the resolve was incredible, especially after how much time we put into it, and for it not to go your way. You know, sometimes you go all in on a defensive game plan, and the first part doesn't work. You got to adjust, or you got to adapt. And I thought our guys did a nice job of that, and that's a big part of, you know, the start is the start, right? That's the first two drives. But then there's a lot left to game to play. There's always going to be dog mentality. There's always going to be next play mentality in a football game, and that's what I was proud of for the offense.
Nick, we were expecting a lot more under center this season with the new offense. Is Jalen in shotgun still so much because he's uncomfortable under center?
I don't think that's the case. Again, you do what you need to do each week. I think sometimes there's different avenues to being under center. You also have pistol, which simulates under center. I'm not saying that we've been in that a bunch, but you know, there's parts of that as well. And I think just different game plans call for different things. I think we've run the ball well. I know we're up there amongst the top teams in the league running the football, which is where you talk about under center, but also you talk about under center for the play action pass game. But you're also running, when you're running the football, you want to mesh the play action pass game to the way you're running the football. So there's going to be a time and place for the under center. It hasn't been as much as we probably anticipate. I know you guys anticipated, but it's probably what we have probably anticipated right now. And so there's always room for that. There's always room for times to do that and times not to do that.
How do you balance the energy, enthusiasm that you bring to the team with composure? And how important is that to model the way you carry yourself and set an example for the players?
Yeah, sure. I think that the energy, like, I think if you ask the guys or ask anybody that's building, the way I am during the game is probably very similar to the way I am during the meetings, during a team meeting, during a corrections meeting, or on the practice field. But you know, again, there's a time and place for that. And so it is. It's composure. It's being able to have the knowledge of when to be energetic and who to be energetic with. And really that's it. And so again, it's my job as the leader, one of the leaders of this football team, is to, you know, practice what I preach, be accountable. And, you know, I think that's a big part of it, right? You know, being able to admit, hey, here's what, like, all I want these guys to do is get better, to help us win football games, become better men for them in their lives. And so I think accountability is a big thing. So when I screw up, which, you know, I obviously said that I did yesterday and I thought I did yesterday or 2 days ago, that's a good opportunity for me to stand in front of the team and tell them that. And take accountability. If I want them to be accountable, I better be accountable myself.
Nick, we appreciate you being on the show today, and good luck, obviously, versus the Giants on Sunday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
all right,
Nick.
There he is, Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni. James, first crack at it. Your reaction?
I thought it was fine. I didn't like the answer about the kids and just doubling down and saying,
like that
basically, like, too bad my kids want to come. Like, I'm sure a lot of coaches' kids want to come up there. I'm sure that'd be a neat thing for a lot of coaches' kids to do, or players' kids, or whatever. Like, just because they're your kids doesn't mean you can do that. Like, I would love to bring my daughter to work with me. I never want to leave my daughter. She's my favorite thing in the world. Every second I get to spend with her is like a gift. Like, I would bring her to me. She'd sit right there.
Here's where I'm at.
You know what
here's
I mean? Like, it is what it is.
On that topic, two things. One, I'm very disappointed that his answer was what it was. I think it's a straight mistake.
I'm blown away.
I'm shocked.
It's a straight mistake.
Two, it means Lurie and Howie are permitting it, at least to this point, and didn't tell him in the last 40 hours, don't do it again.
Now, hold on. I think there's also a possibility that he's saying that to defend what he did, but will never bring the kids up again.
You know what I mean?
Or at least until they're a big playoff win or something.
You know what? If you were, I mean, maybe, James, but here's the thing. If you're about accountability and you're told don't do it, then just say, you know what? That was a mistake. I'm not doing it again.
I agree with you. That's accountability.
But
they might not have talked to him about it. Like,
they
who
might not have, but you know what? It's 40 hours. And he's met with the media
two
times.
That he hasn't been talked to about
it. I'm not certain of it.
He is about being accountable.
Listen,
I think he just would have said, yeah, I made a mistake, and I fixed it. I talked to Mr. Lurie and Howie about it, and we're not going to
go down
there.
But maybe Lurie and Howie are just of the mindset, like the players were from this past week, let's just let Nick get back to being Nick. If that's what he needs
to be
his best. But here's the thing, and this was sort of my point when I asked the question about the fans. It frustrates fans. Now, you can make the point that doesn't matter as much as winning and losing on the field, and I would agree. It doesn't matter as much as really winning. I don't mean beating the frickin' Cleveland Browns by 4 points. Really winning. Getting to 11 wins, getting to 12 wins, being an elite football team, having a shot to win a Super Bowl, being a team that galvanizes the fan base and that people feel proud about. People didn't feel proud Sunday at 4:30.
No way.
So I thought that was not a good answer, and more importantly, not a good mindset. Joe to Cameron, John
Ritchie. But it's a shame that they have to talk to him in order for that mindset to be right.
That's their choice.
Like, that's a... But you understand what I'm saying? Like,
that's their choice.
I think it was right that he apologized, that he came out and said, hey, I was wrong in doing what I did. I think that's because they encouraged him to do that. I think that therein lies the problem. Then we can get into that another time. I'm just saying,
you know, we can talk about accountability, but he won't even say what he said to the fan.
I know.
So is that accountability?
No. It's partial accountability, which in my mind,
I mean, right?
Really,
it was privately said in front of 70,000 people,
right? With probably 100 people, roughly.
I love it. It's like the cameras might have caught it, and then you could figure it out. But if I like, what? What are you talking about?
Say what you said. That's all. You've said it. You apologize for it. So just say what you said.
If you're willing to say it again in front of 70,000 people and cameras, say it here.
Did it feel like that just tidied things up for anyone? Did it feel like that helped you feel better?
Not me.
I don't think so either. I really was hoping for that.
I was too. Look, we asked the questions and the topics that we felt people... And look, guys, we could have done that for an hour. We're not going to get them for an hour. I wish we could get into more. We got into a lot. A lot of that I didn't love. But it's your reaction and your chance next, Joe.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.